You Know They Got a Hell of a Band by Stephen King. Read by Grace Slate. When Mary woke up, they were lost. She knew it, and Clark knew it too, although he didn't want to admit it at first. He was wearing his "I'm pissed, so don't fuck with me" look, where his mouth kept getting smaller and smaller until you thought it might disappear altogether. And lost wasn't how Clark would put it. Clark would say they had taken a wrong turn somewhere, and it would just about kill him to go even that far. They'd set off from Portland the day before. Clark worked for a computer company, one of the giants, and it had been his idea that they should see something of the Oregon which lay outside the pleasant but humdrum upper-middle-class suburb of Portland where they lived, an area that was known to its inhabitants as Software City. "They say it's beautiful out there in the boonies," he'd told her. "You want to go take a look? I've got a week. And the transfer rumors have already started. If we don't see some of the real Oregon, I think the last 16 months are going to be nothing but a black hole in my memory." She had agreed willingly enough. School had let out 10 days before, and she had no summer classes to teach. Enjoying the pleasantly haphazard catch-as-catch-can feel of the trip, forgetting that spur-of-the-moment vacations often ended up just like this, with the vacationers lost along some back road which blundered its way up the overgrown butt crack of nowhere. It was an adventure, she supposed. At least you could look at it that way if you wanted. But she had turned 32 in January, and she thought 32 was maybe just a little too old for adventures. These days, her idea of a really nice vacation was a motel with a clean pool, bathrobes on the beds, and a hairdryer that worked in the bathroom. Yesterday had been fine, though. The countryside so gorgeous that even Clark had several times been awed to an unaccustomed silence. They'd spent the night at a nice country inn just west of Eugene, had made love not once but twice, something she was most definitely not too old to enjoy. And this morning had headed south, meaning to spend the night in Klamath Falls. They had begun the day on Oregon State Highway 58, and that was all right. But then, over lunch in the town of Oak Ridge, Clark had suggested they get off the main highway, which was pretty well clogged with RVs and logging trucks. "Well, I don't know," Mary spoke with the dubiousness of a woman who has heard many such proposals from her man and endured the consequences of a few. "I'd hate to get lost out there, Clark. It looks pretty empty." She had tapped one neatly shaped nail on a spot of green marked Boulder Creek Wilderness Area. That word is wilderness, as in no gas stations, no restrooms, and no motels. "Oh, come on," he said, pushing aside the remains of his chicken-fried steak. On the juke, Steve Earle and the Dukes were singing 6 Days on the Road, and outside the dirt street windows, a bunch of bored-looking kids were doing turns and pop-outs on their skateboards. They looked as if they were just marking time out there, waiting to be old enough to blow this town for good, and Mary knew exactly how they felt. "Nothing to it, babe. We take 58, a few more miles east, then turn south on State Road 42. See it?" "Uh-huh." She also saw that while Highway 58 was a fat red line, State Road 42 was only a squiggle of black thread. But she'd been full of meatloaf and mashed potatoes and hadn't wanted to argue with Clark's pioneering instinct while she felt like a boa constrictor that had just swallowed a goat. What she'd wanted, in fact, was to tilt back the passenger seat of their lovely old Mercedes and take a snooze. "Then," he pushed on, "there's this road here. It's not numbered, so it's probably only a country road, but it goes right down to Tokatee Falls. And from there, it's only a hop and a jump over to U.S. 97. So, what do you think?" "That you'll probably get us lost," she said, a wisecrack she rather regretted later. "But I guess we'll be all right as long as you can find a place wide enough to turn the princess around in." "Sold, American," he said, beaming, and pulled his chicken-fried steak back in front of him. He began to eat again, congealed gravy and all. "Ugh-a-doo," she said, holding one hand up in front of her face and wincing. "How can you?" "It's good," Clark said in tones so muffled only a wife could have understood him. "Besides, when one is traveling, one should eat the native dishes." "It looks like someone sneezed a mouthful of snuff onto a very old hamburger," she said. "I repeat, ugh-a-doo." They left Oak Ridge in good spirits, and at first all had gone swimmingly. Trouble hadn't set in until they turned off SR 42 and onto the unmarked road, the one Clark had been so sure was going to breeze them right into Tokatee Falls. It hadn't seemed like trouble at first. County road or not, the new way had been a lot better than Highway 42, which had been potholed and frost-heaved even in the summer. They'd gone along famously, in fact, taking turns plugging tapes into the dashboard player. Clark was into people like Wilson Pickett, Al Green, and Pop Staples. Mary's taste lay in entirely different directions. "What do you see in all those white boys?" he asked as she plugged in her current favorite, Lou Reed's New York. "Married one, didn't I?" she asked, and that made him laugh. The first sign of trouble came 15 minutes later, when they came to a fork in the road. Both forks looked equally promising. "Holy crap," Clark said, pulling up and popping the glove compartment open so he could get at the map. He looked at it for a long time. "That isn't on the map." "Oh boy, here we go," Mary said. She'd been on the edge of a doze when Clark pulled up at the unexpected fork, and she was feeling a little irritated with him. "Want my advice?" "No," he said, sounding a little irritated himself, "but I suppose I'll get it. And I hate it when you roll your eyes at me that way, in case you didn't know." "What way is that, Clark? Like I was an old dog that just farted under the dinner table? Go on, tell me what you think. Lay it on me. It's your nickel." "Go back while there's still time. That's my advice." "Uh-huh. Now, if you only had a sign that said repent." "Is that supposed to be funny?" "I don't know, Mayor," he said in a glum tone of voice, and then just sat there, alternating looks through the bug-splattered windshield with a close examination of the map. They'd been married for almost 15 years, and Mary knew him well enough to believe he would almost certainly insist on pushing on, not in spite of the unexpected fork in the road, but because of it. When Clark Willingham's balls are on the line, he doesn't back down, she thought, and then put a hand over her mouth to hide the grin that had surfaced there. She was not quite quick enough. Clark glanced at her, one eyebrow raised, and she had a sudden discomforting thought. If she could read him as easily as a child's storybook after all this time, then maybe he could do the same with her. "Something?" he asked, and his voice was just a little too thin. It was at that moment, even before she had fallen asleep, she now realized that his mouth had started to get smaller. "Want to share, sweetheart?" She shook her head, just clearing my throat. He nodded, pushed his glasses up on his ever-expanding forehead, and brought the map up until it was almost touching the tip of his nose. "Well," he said, "it's got to be the left-hand fork, because that's the one that goes south, toward Tokatee Falls. The other one heads east. It's probably a ranch road or something." "A ranch road with a yellow line running down the middle of it?" Clark's mouth grew a little smaller. "You'd be surprised how well off some of these ranchers are," he said. She thought of pointing out to him that the days of the scouts and pioneers were long gone, that his testicles were not actually on the line, and then she decided she wanted a little doze off in the afternoon sun a lot more than she wanted to squabble with her husband, especially after the lovely double feature last night. And after all, they were bound to come out somewhere, weren't they? With that comforting thought in her mind and Lou Reed in her ears, singing about the last great American whale, Mary Willingham dozed off. By the time the road Clark had picked began to deteriorate, she was sleeping shallowly and dreaming that they were back in the Oak Ridge Cafe where they'd eaten lunch. She was trying to put a quarter in the jukebox, but the coin slot was plugged with something that looked like flesh. One of the kids who had been outside in the parking lot walked past her with his skateboard under his arm and his trailblazer's hat turned around on his head. "What's the matter with this thing?" Mary asked him. The kid came over, took a quick look, and shrugged. "Oh, that ain't nothing," he said. "That's just some guy's body, broken for you and for many. This is no rinky-dink operation we got here. We're talking mass culture, Sugar Muffin." Then he reached up, gave the tip of her right breast a tweak, not a very friendly one either, and walked away. When she looked back at the jukebox, she saw it had filled up with blood and shadowy floating things that looked suspiciously like human organs. "Maybe you better give that Lou Reed album a rest," she thought. And within the pool of blood behind the glass, a record floated down onto the turntable as if at her thought, and Lou began to sing Busload of Faith. While Mary was having this steadily more unpleasant dream, the road continued to worsen, the patches spreading until it was really all patch. The Lou Reed album, a long one, came to an end and began to recycle. Clark didn't notice. The pleasant look he had started the day with was entirely gone. His mouth had shrunk to the size of a rosebud. If Mary had been awake, she would have coaxed him into turning around miles back. He knew this, just as he knew how she would look at him if she woke up now and saw this narrow swatch of crumbling hot top. A road only if one thought in the most charitable terms. With piney woods pressing in close enough on both sides to keep the patched tar in constant shadow. They had not passed a car headed in the other direction since leaving SR-42. He knew he should turn around. Mary hated it when he got into shit like this, always forgetting the many times he had found his way unerringly along strange roads to their planned destinations. Clark Willingham was one of those millions of American men who are firmly convinced that they have a compass in their heads. But he continued to push on, at first stubbornly convinced that they must come out in Tokatee Falls, then just hoping. Besides, there really was no place to turn around. If he tried to do it, he would mire the princess to her hubcaps in one of the marshy ditches which bordered this miserable excuse for a road. And God knows how long it would take to get a tow truck in here, or how far he'd have to walk just to call one. Then at last he did come to a place where he could have turned around, another fork in the road, and elected not to do so. The reason was simple. Although the right fork was rutted gravel with grass growing up the middle, the leftward tending branch was once again wide, well-paved, and divided by a bright stroke of yellow. According to the compass in Clark's head, this fork headed due south. He could all but smell Tokatee Falls. 10 miles, maybe 15, 20 at the outside. He did at least consider turning back, however. When he told Mary so later, he saw doubt in her eyes, but it was true. He decided to go on because Mary was beginning to stir, and he was quite sure that the bumpy, potholed stretch of road he'd just driven would wake her up if he turned back. And then she would look at him with those wide, beautiful blue eyes of hers. Just look. That'd be enough. Besides, why should he spend an hour and a half going back when Tokatee Falls was just a spin and a promise away? Look at that road, he thought. You think a road like that is going to just peter out? He put the princess back in gear, started down the left fork, and sure enough, the road petered out. Over the first hill, the yellow line disappeared again. Over the second, the paving gave out, and they were on a rutted dirt track with the dark woods pressing even closer on either side, and the sun, Clark was aware of this for the first time, now sliding down the wrong side of the sky. The pavement ended too suddenly for Clark to brake and baby the princess onto the new surface, and there was a hard, spring-jarring thud that woke Mary. She sat up with a jerk and looked around with wide eyes. "Where?" she began, and then, to make the afternoon utterly perfect and complete, the smoky voice of Lou Reed sped up until he was gabbling out the lyrics to "Good Evening, Mr. Waldheim" at the speed of Alvin and the Chipmunks. "Ah," she said and punched the eject button. The tape belched out, followed by an ugly brown afterbirth, coils of shiny tape. The princess hit a nearly bottomless pothole, lurched hard to the left, and then threw herself up and out like a clipper ship corkscrewing through a storm wave. "Clark, don't say anything," he said through clenched teeth. "We're not lost. This'll turn back to tar in just a minute or two, probably over the next hill. We are not lost." Still upset by her dream, even though she could not quite remember what it had been, Mary held the ruined tape in her lap, mourning it. She supposed she could buy another one, but not out here. She looked at the brooding trees, which seemed to belly right up to the road like starving guests at a banquet, and guessed it was a long way to the nearest Tower Records. She looked at Clark, noted his flushed cheeks and nearly non-existent mouth, and decided it would be politic to keep her own mouth shut, at least for the time being. If she was quiet and non-accusatory, he would be more likely to come to his senses before this miserable excuse for a road petered out in a gravel pit or a quicksand bog. "Besides, I can't very well turn around," he said, as if she had suggested that very thing. "I can see that," she replied neutrally. He glanced at her, perhaps wanting to fight, perhaps just feeling embarrassed and hoping to see she wasn't too pissed at him, at least not yet, and then looked back through the windshield. Now there were weeds and grass growing up the center of this road, too. And the way was so narrow that if they did happen to meet another car, one of them would have to back up. Nor was that the end of the fun. The ground beyond the wheel ruts looked increasingly untrustworthy. The scrubby trees seemed to be jostling each other for position in the wet ground. There were no power poles on either side of the road. She almost pointed this out to Clark and then decided it might be smarter to hold her tongue about that, too. He drove on in silence until they came around a downslanting curve. He was hoping against hope that they would see a change for the better on the far side, but the overgrown track only went on as it had before. It was, if anything, a little fainter and a little narrower, and had begun to remind Clark of roads in the fantasy epics he liked to read, stories by people like Terry Brooks, Stephen Donaldson, and, of course, J.R.R. Tolkien, the spiritual father of them all. In these tales, the characters, who usually had hairy feet and pointed ears, took these neglected roads in spite of their own gloomy intuitions, and usually ended up battling trolls or bogarts or mace-wielding skeletons. "Clark, I know," he said, and hammered the wheel suddenly with his left hand, a short, frustrated stroke that succeeded only in honking the horn. "I know." He stopped the Mercedes, which now straddled the entire road. Road? Hell, lane was now too grand a word for it. Slammed the transmission into park and got out. Mary got out on the other side more slowly. The balsam smell of the trees was heavenly, and she thought there was something beautiful about the silence, unbroken as it was by the sound of any motor. Even the far-off drone of an airplane or human voice. But there was something spooky about it as well. Even the sound she could hear, the tweet of a bird in the shadowy firs, the sough of the wind, the rough rumble of the princess's diesel engine, served to emphasize the wall of quiet encircling them. She looked across the princess's gray roof at Clark, and it was not reproach or anger in her gaze, but appeal. "Get us out of this, all right? Please?" "Sorry, hon," he said, and the worry she saw in his face did nothing to soothe her. "Really." She tried to speak, but at first no sound came out of her dry throat. She cleared it and tried again. "What do you think about backing up, Clark?" He considered it for several moments. The tuit bird had time to call again and be answered from somewhere deeper in the forest before shaking his head. "Only as a last resort. It's at least 2 miles back to the last fork in the road." "You mean there was another one?" He winced a little, dropped his eyes, and nodded. "Backing up, well, you see how narrow the road is and how mucky the ditches are. If we went off..." He shook his head and sighed. "So we go on?" "I think so. If the road goes entirely to hell, of course, I'll have to try it. But by then we'll be in even deeper, won't we?" So far she was managing it quite well, she thought, to keep a tone of accusation from creeping into her voice. But it was getting harder and harder to do. She was pissed at him, quite severely pissed, and pissed at herself as well for letting him get them into this in the first place, and then for coddling him the way she was now. "Yes, but I like the odds on finding a wide place up ahead better than I like the odds on reversing for a couple of miles along this piece of crap. If it turns out we do have to back out, I'll take it in stages. Back up for 5 minutes, rest for 10. Back up for 5 more. He smiled lamely. "It'll be an adventure." "Oh, yes, it'll be that, all right," Mary said, thinking again that her definition for this sort of thing was not adventure, but pain in the ass. "Are you sure you aren't pressing on because you believe in your heart that we're going to find Tokatee Falls right over the next hill?" For a moment his mouth seemed to disappear entirely, and she braced for an explosion of righteous male wrath. Then his shoulders sagged, and he only shook his head. In that moment she saw what he was going to look like 30 years from now, and that frightened her a lot more than getting caught on a back road in the middle of nowhere. "No," he said, "I guess I've given up on Tokatee Falls. One of the great rules of travel in America is that roads without electrical lines running along at least one side of them don't go anywhere." So he had noticed, too. "Come on," he said, getting back in. "I'm going to try like hell to get us out of this, and next time I'll listen to you." "Yeah, yeah," Mary thought, with a mixture of amusement and tired resentment. "I've heard that one before." But before he could pull the transmission stick on the console down from park to drive, she put her hand over his. "I know you will," she said, turning what he'd said into a promise. "Now get us out of this mess." "Count on it," Clark said. "And be careful. You can count on that, too." He gave her a small smile that made her feel a little better, then engaged the princess's transmission, The big gray Mercedes, looking very out of place in these deep woods, began to creep down the shadowy track again. They drove another mile by the odometer, and nothing changed but the width of the cart track they were on. It grew narrower still. Mary thought the scruffy furs now looked not like hungry guests at a banquet, but morbidly curious spectators at the sight of a nasty accident. If the track got any narrower, they would begin to hear the squall of branches along the sides of the car. The ground under the trees, meanwhile, had gone from mucky to swampy. Mary could see patches of standing water, dusty with pollen and fallen pine needles in some of the dips. Her heart was beating much too fast, and twice she had caught herself gnawing at her nails, a habit she thought she'd given up for good the year before she married Clark. She'd begun to realize that if they got stuck now, they would almost certainly spend the night camped out in the Princess. And there were animals in these woods. She'd heard them crashing around out there, some of them sounding big enough to be bears. The thought of meeting a bear while they stood looking at their hopelessly mired Mercedes made her swallow something that felt and tasted like a large lint ball. "Clark, I think we better give it up and try backing. It's already past 3 o'clock, and look," he said, pointing ahead. "Is it a sign?" She squinted. Ahead, the lane rose toward the crest of a deeply wooded hill. There was a bright blue oblong standing near the top. "Yes," she said. "It's a sign, all right." "Great. Can you read it?" "Uh-huh. It says, 'If you came this far, you really fucked up.'" He shot her a complex look of amusement and irritation. "Very funny, Mayor." "Thank you, Clark. I try." "We'll go to the top of the hill, read the sign, and see what's over the crest. If we don't see anything hopeful, we'll try backing. Agreed?" "Agreed." He patted her leg, then drove cautiously on. The Mercedes was moving so slowly now that they could hear the soft sound of the weeds on the crown of the road wickering against the undercarriage. Mary really could make out the words on the sign now, but at first she rejected them, thinking she had to be mistaken. It was just too crazy. But they drew closer still, and the words didn't change. "Does it say what I think it does?" Clark asked her. Mary gave a short, bewildered laugh. "Sure, but it must be somebody's idea of a joke, don't you think? I've given up thinking. It keeps getting me into trouble, but I see something that isn't a joke. Look, Mary." 20 or 30 feet beyond the sign, just before the crest of the hill, the road widened dramatically and was once more both paved and lined. Mary felt worry roll off her heart like a boulder. Clark was grinning. "Isn't that beautiful?" She nodded happily, grinning herself. They reached the sign and Clark stopped. They read it again. "Welcome to Rock and Roll Heaven, Oregon. We cook with gas, so will you. J.C.'s, Chamber of Commerce, Lions, Elks." "It's got to be a joke," she repeated. "Maybe not." "A town called Rock and Roll Heaven? Please, Clark." "Why not? There's Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, Dry Shark, Nevada, and a town in Pennsylvania called Intercourse, so why not Rock and Roll Heaven in Oregon?" She laughed giddily. The sense of relief was really incredible. "You made that up." "What?" "Intercourse, Pennsylvania." "I didn't. Ralph Ginsburg once tried to send a magazine called Eros from there for the postmark. The feds wouldn't let him. Swear." "And who knows, maybe the town was founded by a bunch of communal back-to-the-land hippies in the 60s. They went establishment. Lions, Elks, J.C.'s. But the original name stayed." He was quite taken with the idea. He found it both funny and oddly sweet. "Besides, I don't think it matters. What matters is we found some honest-to-God pavement again, honey. The stuff you drive on." She nodded, "So drive on it, but be careful." "You bet." The Princess nosed up onto the pavement, which was not asphalt, but a smooth composition surface without a patch or expansion joint to be seen. "Careful's my middle ne-" Then they reached the crest of the hill, and the last word died in his mouth. He stamped on the brake pedal so hard that their seatbelts locked, then jammed the transmission lever back into park. "Holy wow," Clark said. They sat in the idling Mercedes, open-mouthed, looking down at the town below.